All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Thursday, May 5th of 2022. My name's Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim, and if this is your first time watching this show, this is an open Q&A style stream where I answer questions that we get in through YouTube chat, through email, through our Slack community about SaberSim, about DFS, really whatever you guys want to talk about. So if you are watching me here live, feel free to fire away into YouTube chat or into Slack. And if you catch the recording of this video on YouTube, there'll be a link to join the Slack community in the description of this video. You can join up, fire away your questions, and I'll get to them on the very next stream. If by chance you are watching the recording of this as well, there are timestamps in the description too. So if you want to skip around, watch different segments of the show, whatever you're looking for, whatever you're interested in, there is a timestamped link in the description as well. We've got some interesting questions here today. We'll start things off with kind of just a general demo, I guess, of SaberSim, kind of a walkthrough. I think the question says, what are the steps of using SaberSim? So a good opportunity to kind of just do a basic demo of what the process of building lineups on SaberSim looks like. There are a few questions about our ownership fade slider, how the ownership fade slider works, a couple specific questions about what happens if you are removing players from the pool and just moving the slider around and different things like that. So we'll talk a little bit about the ownership fade slider. I saw some questions about pitcher correlations, some more follow-up from our research build conversations that we've been having here throughout the week. So all kinds of different things to talk about here on today's stream. So we'll get into this shortly. Before we get started here, let me go ahead and actually first show off this here. And this has been a popular request here. But let me see here. Hang on. And a bit of a work in progress still. But let's get this up on screen. Boom. Podcast version of Office Hours is now up on Spotify. We are working on getting this up on Apple and Google Podcasts as well. I think their review process takes a little bit longer to get these things up. So we are still waiting here on the Apple and Google versions. But I know this has been something that people have been asking for a long time. So we now have, there should be the newest version of Office Hours will go live as a podcast on Spotify and all of these platforms once Apple and Google are ready every single day. I've also added a few of our most recent strategy sessions, I guess. We're not really calling them that so much anymore, but some of our more I don't know, the streams where we have interviews and the model streams and things like that, those are all up there as well. So I know, especially for you guys that are kind of just watching along and listening along here every single day, probably will be a little bit of a easier way to consume Office Hours here on the podcast version. So pretty excited about that. That's a cool development here. I know, again, that's been a popular request here for some time. So let's go ahead now and get the app pulled up. And we'll go ahead and start jumping into questions right away here. So let's do it. I wanted to start here first with a question from Purgy. Not sure how that's pronounced, but a good one to start. And he said, a newbie question. Is there a place on Slack or on the site that precisely describes the steps to creating lineups? I'm somewhat familiar with SaberSim's methodology, so I can make educated guesses, but I think it would help to have a quick reference that defines each step. Thanks in advance. Yeah, and I mean, this is a good question. And, you know, honestly, something that we're a little aware of the fact that we haven't done the best job of before of just having like a very basic getting started guide. I've mentioned recently that we have a pretty big app update coming out here in the near future that will kind of overhaul the entry editor, the late swap, a few other of these screens here on the site. And after that comes out, I'm planning on recording kind of a getting started guide here, both to introduce people to that the changes there and the improvements there, but also just to act as a general guide for that kind of thing. We do have one. I did make a quick one during NBA season on our support .sabersim.com knowledge base here. I think if you just type help, Yeah. Okay. So if you just type help in here, this was for NBA season. So I know we're now really kind of in full swing of baseball here, but there is a video here, 15 minutes long, that kind of walks through the basics of how to use SaberSim, at least for NBA. Generally, you know, the overall process pretty similar for all sports, but I thought for today's stream, we'll kick things off with, I think, more of a baseball focused introduction of just how to use SaberSim to build some of your first lineups. So the first thing you should do when you sit down, you're ready to start building your lineups for a slate, is if you've already reserved your entries for that slate, is to just upload your entries file. And I've actually already done that here for the main slate tonight, so I think my entries file will load up here automatically right away. But if you don't have one uploaded, you'll see a message that it makes it super easy. It just says download template file from DraftKings. If you click that, we'll immediately download your entries file, and you can just pull that from your downloads and upload it, right? And that's going to make it super easy to get these lineups out of SaberSim and into your contests when the time comes. But let's bounce back to the home screen here. So the home screen, step one, right? This is where you're going to set your foundation for the build for your lineups. And you'll see a lot of things that are generally pretty familiar if you've used other optimizers before. You'll see projections, ownership projections, and also a lot of detailed stat projections here for different players, along with the team totals and things like that. The most important thing to note here is that all of this information is from our simulation. So I know that's a common question that people get when they use SaberSim for the first time. Are these game totals? Are these from Vegas? Are the stat projections? Are these historical projections? Different things like that. All of this here comes directly from our sims. So if you want to make adjustments to your projections or your ownership or anything like that, you can do that here. A couple notes on that. First of all, one thing very unique to SaberSim is that you have the opportunity to make adjustments and fine tune and get things exactly where you want them to be after the lineups have been built. So a lot of other tools out there, you have to get everything perfectly set before the build and then build lineups and kind of hope it works out. And if it doesn't, come back to the beginning and start over or make more adjustments. You don't really have to do that here, right? So I would say if you know exactly how you want to deal with a particular team or player or situation or something like that ahead of time, to let us know. Maybe in your research, you've decided that you want to be a little under on Nola or something, for example, for tonight's slate, right? You can knock his projection down, let us know ahead of time, but you don't need to feel like you need to get everything dialed in here on step one. Once you are ready to build your lineups, you can click the new build button, the screen button up here, and you'll see this screen. And actually, it will look like this the first time you pull it up. And we call this select your contest for a reason. The most important thing you can do here on step two is tell us what contest you are playing. And what that will do is that will change our sliders, correlation, ownership fade, and sim variance, in line with what strategies you need to be successful in that sized and type of contest. So you'll see small field, single entry. We'll have a different set of slider settings, different set of build settings than what you need for a large field 150 max, right? These sliders are backtested. They are data-driven. They are not just educated guesses. We've actually done backtesting on these. And in general, I would say that step two, the select your contest, is probably the last place you would want to go to add value, at least when you're first getting started. These default sliders are going to do a very good job of building you lineups that are appropriate for the contest you're playing. And I think it's easy for new players to come in here and think that they should, you know, mess around with the sliders and this is the best place to get started. And this is actually probably where I would spend the least amount of your time if you're new to SaberSim. So let us know what contest you're building for. We'll use 20 max, 10 to 50K, something like the $4 20 max for this build, and it'll adjust those sliders accordingly. A couple other settings that are useful just to know that are here in the rules tab. There is a stacking rule where you can add stacks and force certain types of stacks into your lineups. You can also add player groups, which I think are a little less useful for baseball, but I know basketball and football and some other sports, you may want to add some player groups. You can do that here. Because SaberSim takes into account correlation and variance and ownership and things like that automatically, if you are new to SaberSim, you probably will need to make far less stacking rules and player groups than you are used to if you've used other tools in the past. So for your first couple builds, I would actually recommend making no rules, seeing what kinds of lineups you're getting, and then going back and adding rules if you feel like you need them. But let's go ahead and build some lineups here, and we'll talk about what the build screen looks like. So while this is building, one thing that is very important to note is you'll probably see here in just a moment when this moves one more percentage point away, maybe. maybe this build got stuck. Well, good opportunity. You know, sometimes if this happens here, a lot of times what I will do is just cancel the build, delete it, and start over. Haven't seen that happen in a while, but sometimes the build can get a little stuck there. So we'll let this build here, and then I'll continue going on my thought. There we go. Okay, so you can see, building lineups, right? We're not just building 20 lineups. We selected a 20 max, but we're building 500. The point of that is primarily so that you can do what I was talking about before, where you can edit your exposures and get your lineups fine-tuned in step three in the build screen, right? So ultimately, we need to come up with 20 lineups, but we're building 500 so that you can play around and get your exposures exactly where you want them to be. So if we come back to this, right, maybe, for example, you know, we had decided we wanted to be a little under on NOLA, but maybe we don't want just 10% NOLA in our lineups. Maybe we want 20%, right? So what you do on step three is a lot of these edits to your exposure. So I can set a minimum exposure to Aaron NOLA here of 20%. And what that's going to do is it's going to sort through the pool of 500 lineups, looking for the best 20 where Aaron NOLA is in at least four of them, 20%, right? We can do this by player exposures. We can do this by team exposures, game stacks, and stack types. So maybe we come over here and say, you know, yeah, maybe we want to leverage against that NOLA chalk a little bit and play some met stacks, but we don't want to do that in 80% of our lineups. Maybe we bring this down a little bit to 40% or something like that, right? And you can see what's happening here. We're sorting through that pool of 500 to get to 20 that we like. Same thing. Another thing I definitely recommend taking a look at is your stacks. And you can see here, right, we didn't set a stacking rule, and automatically we're getting pretty nice stacks, right? I would be happy playing any of these stacks for a six-game baseball slate. So I probably wouldn't make any adjustments here. But maybe you don't want to play just a 4-2 stack. You could just cross that stack type off, and then same deal. We'll sort through, pull in the best lineups that we can here. Once you're all set, once you're all ready to go, you can just click the save button up here, right? We'll save that lineup set, and then we can go back to the entry tab, and we will fill our entries with our lineups. So the easiest way to do that is to just click the fill button, right? Make sure you have the lineup set here, and then you need to pick a fill method. So we have four different fill methods. There's a tooltip here that explains these in a little bit more detail of what each of these does. There's also a video. If you click this little tooltip here, this video will explain in detail what each of the fill methods do. I'm going to use rank for right now. And what rank does is it's basically just going to take the top lineups and put them into every contest. So in this case, my best overall lineup is going to go into all my single entries. My top three lineups are going to go into my three entry maxes, and then the 20 lineups are going to go into all my 20 maxes. So I can go ahead and just click rank, and I'll click apply, and you'll see my exposures here changed. So everything updates over here, right? Everything looks good. And then super easy to get your lineups out of SaberSim now and into DraftKings. Click download all entries, download an OpenDK, and it will download the file up here and take you to the right page on DK to upload it. And we are good to go. And we're uploaded. So that's kind of the basic version, right? There's a lot more to unpack at every step. There's a variety of different things to talk about here. If you have any other kind of more detailed questions about any step of the process or any particular functionality, feel free to ask away. But I think that's kind of a good basic introduction of what the process looks like for building your first initial lineups with SaberSim. So good question to kick the show off here today. And always good to do a quick demo here on stream. So let's go ahead and keep it going here. So I'm going to bounce around a little bit because I think there's kind of, again, a little bit of a general, I would say a general theme here on today's stream. So I want to jump to Matt's question next, which will be a good opportunity for us to dive into the ownership fade slider a little bit. So Matt had asked, are you able to explain how the ownership fade slider works? And then what I can expect in terms of how it will affect a build with small changes. For example, lowering from 5 to 4 or increasing from 4 to 5. I'm trying to get a better understanding on how I can use it when I size up a slate and determine the majority of a field ownership is going to be in 1 to 2 spots instead of manually changing ownership numbers team by team. So the builder knows how I think field ownership falls and how I can use the slider to account for ownership more or less. Okay, good question here. So I'm going to start with just kind of explaining how this slider works. So the ownership fade slider, you actually kind of, to understand the ownership fade slider, you really have to understand the sim variance slider first. So I'm going to start there. So very unique to SaberSim, one thing we do that nobody else out there is really doing is we simulate all of these games play by play thousands of times for every slate, right? And we have the actual game outcomes of individual simulation. So yes, we will project for somebody like Aaron Nolan. We'll say his default projection is 20.78 or whatever it was here. Let me reset that. 20.78, right? But his range of outcomes in our individual game sims actually look like this. And this is called a histogram plot. And these are basically like buckets of different point outcomes, but there are actual individual game sims associated with each of these. So if we say, you know, we have a game sim where Nola scores 26 points, right? That is associated with an actual game result of the way that the game could actually play out, right? So we have all of these sims, and what the sim variance slider does is it controls essentially how many simulations are we going to look at for a given lineup when we go to build that lineup of our thousands of sims, right? If sim variance was at zero, we would look at every single simulation we had. We would optimize for the average projection across every sim. And as sim variance gets bigger, as this number gets bigger and bigger, we're looking at a fewer number of simulations for each lineup, all the way up to 10, which would be a single game simulation. So a lineup would be built on it would be one single game sim of every game on the slate. We would build a lineup for that sim, and then on the next lineup, it would be a different sim for every game, right? So the reason you need to know how sim variance works to understand ownership fade is because ownership fade ultimately works against, or not even want to say against, it uses the fantasy point projections that those players scored in that set of sims and adjusts them for ownership. So how that works is we will compare a player's projection. We will take the player's projection that they scored in the sim being used for that game, compare that player's ownership projection to the average ownership projection at the position. And if that player is owned more than average, we will make an adjustment down of what that player scored in that set of sims. And if that player is lower owned than the average player at that position, we will make an adjustment up. And the size of that adjustment is ultimately sized by how high this ownership fade slider is. So basically, we're taking sims, we're taking raw fantasy points scored in individual buckets of simulations and adjusting them based on whether or not that player is more owned or less owned than the average player at that position, right? So that is how it works. I guess the last thing to note there is there is also part of the ownership fade calculation takes into account variance. So a player with a wider range of outcomes is more likely to have to be punished more by the ownership fade if they're highly owned. A player with a more narrow range of outcomes that is more likely to hit that mean projection will be punished a little bit less by the ownership fade slider the higher their ownership is, right? That is how it works. I think it gets a little bit difficult when we start talking about like quantifying the difference between these different individual levels. The way I think it is easiest to think about this, and I think I know this isn't perfectly quantified or very descriptive, I guess, but you can think about this as essentially a linear scale, right? I think, you know, one way you can look at this is like each step in between each of these should have a similar sized impact from one step to the other. So the difference between the ownership fade as you move from 2 to 3 should be the same as you move from 4 to 5 and so on. It's a little bit of a, if you're trying to figure out the impact of what the slider is going to do at different levels, I think the easiest thing to do is actually to just build lineups at those different levels and to look and see what the impact is there. Right. So if you are interested in seeing, you know, what changes when I make the jump from ownership fade 4 to 5, I would spend some time. Let's actually just do this here. So let's do a build on 4 and then take a look and build it on 5. And we'll see the difference. And I think in general, two things to keep in mind here. I think one, the difference between one notch in either direction on the ownership fade slider typically does not have an outsized effect. It does not have a massive change on the impact of your lineups. And two, remember when you're doing these comparison builds that there's already variance in the builds themselves, right? You're not going to get the same lineups every single time because of the sim variance slider, right? So remember that whenever you're kind of comparing two different builds, just keep in mind that there is actually already variance present there, right? So that the differences between any two builds may not just be because of the slider changes, right? But we can kind of take a look here. So this was at 4, right? So fairly comfortable, I guess, with some pitching chalk. Not a full fade of like even the Twins bats, which we expect to be the chalkiest stack at the moment. Some ownership here, right? So, and then let's go ahead and build on 5 and take another look here and see if we can kind of eyeball a little bit of a difference between these two. But this is honestly how I got very familiar with how the sliders kind of work together and what different slider settings actually do. And I think this is, when you have the time for it, a really good way to get a little bit more familiar with these sliders and seeing what the impact of moving these around are, is just by building lineups. So let's take a look at this one. This one is same build, same variance at 5. So actually, you know, kind of right off the bat, actually, you know, a fairly big difference between these two values, right? In this case, all of a sudden, so actually that was a pretty big jump. So maybe it goes against what I was saying kind of before, but all of a sudden, even with the field or more even with the field on some of the chalkier pitchers, getting onto some of the lower owned pitchers here, right? Not completely, you know, jumping onto the lowest owned pitchers, but fading the field a little bit more there. And on our stacks now, all of a sudden, almost a full fade of Twin stacks, right? And getting a lot more exposure to these Met stacks. So, and then, okay. So I think, Matt, honestly, I'm a little bit confused by kind of the second part of the question here, trying to get a better understanding on how I can use it when I size up a slate and determine the majority of the field ownership is going to be in 1 to 2 spots. Instead of manually changing ownership team by team, so the builder knows how I think field ownership falls, how can I use the slider to account for ownership more or less? So I guess I would say this. So the ownership fade slider, I think, is kind of a good, it's kind of a good backstop to make sure ownership is being taken into account, right? So if you otherwise don't really have an opinion on how ownership is going to fall or what the optimal way to exploit the field's ownership is going to be, the builder will, based on the default ownership fade slider, will kind of get you there, right? So we can see for this build, for example, you know, if we were otherwise kind of unopinionated on how we wanted to tackle the slate, it would say, you know, get some exposure to some of these other talented pitchers that are going to be a little lower owned in Luzardo and Ray, and fade some of the chalk Twins bats and leverage directly against that Nola fade by playing some Met stacks, right? That is one of the many different strategies you could use to be profitable on today's slate. And that's kind of where this ownership fade slider is taking you. I think if you are opinionated about how you want to tackle the slate already, right? If you've decided this is where I think the chalk is going to be, and I want to fade it or exploit it in this particular way, I think I would experiment with some builds. I would maybe bring the ownership fade slider down a little bit and make some adjustments in step 2, or I'm sorry, in step 3 in the build phase to kind of make your adjustments yourself, if that makes sense, right? So like, let's go back to this build we ran before, right? So a little bit of a lower ownership fade slider, and maybe you had decided that, you know, based on the way that you were looking at the slate, let's see, maybe, I don't know. Let me think of a kind of a different example. Maybe that you think, that actually, it's going to be Robbie Ray that is really the chalk, SP1 that people really go to, that his ownership projection is going to end up being a lot higher, and that you actually think that the Rays are the better leverage spot on the slate here. I think you can basically, you know, bring down your ownership fade slider a little bit and kind of manually get your exposures to where you want them to be for the slate elsewhere, right? If that makes sense, like kind of manually by yourself doing that. So that's the way I always think about the ownership fade slider, is it will exploit the field for you, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only way that you have to go about doing that. And I think, Matt, maybe if I misunderstood what you're asking here, feel free to chime back at me, and I'm happy to dive back into this a little bit more. But I think the ownership fade slider is the best way to learn what it's doing at different settings is to just build lineups at different settings. So, okay. So a couple other questions about these ownership fade things here. So one from Andrew here. And he said, if I X out a team, does the builder still take into account the ownership of the team that's being X'd when building lineups? Or does the ownership fade slider only look at the values of the players in the pool and calculate based on that? I usually lower ownership fade slider when X'ing a team because I imagine it doesn't, but wanted to check. No, it should. So that the when it is comparing a player's projection to the average ownership projection at that position, that's of the entire pool. So it will still take that into account. It will still calculate ownership fade in the same way. So, I mean, if you're going in, you know, and let's say you're Xing out team stacks of the chalkiest stacks to begin with, right? It's not going to double count ownership in that way and take like the remaining teams and then find the least chalky teams of that remaining bucket and prioritize ownership fade then. There's still nothing wrong with turning down your ownership fade slider if you're doing some of the work to fade ownership ahead of time, right? That's something that Max has talked about before when he's been on stream with me, where he'll make some adjustments to projections in a way that's kind of intended to be exploitative to try to leverage against ownership a little bit. So when he actually goes to build his lineups, sometimes he'll bring the slider down a little bit to avoid double counting. I think it's fine if you want to, you know, if you're going to go in and X out some of the chalky stacks, I think it's fine to bring down your ownership fade slider a little bit since you're already kind of leveraging against that. But in terms of the calculation that's being used, the player's ownership projection is compared to the average ownership at that position for the entire pool, regardless of what players are in your pool. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. So good question. And then an interesting one here from Toasted Taters, similar vibe. And he said, if I'm doing the research builds and then adjusting, okay. So yeah, actually if I'm doing research builds and then adjusting player projections, would we still want to keep the ownership fade slider at default for said contest size? Some of this gets a little bit difficult to one size fits all answer because I don't really know exactly what you're doing. Right. Some of this is going to depend on your own unique process. I think in theory, this idea makes sense, right? And when I've kind of experimented with this kind of process and done things like this before, a lot of times I find that it makes sense to bring down the ownership fade slider to get those lineups looking the way you want. But it depends on what you are doing, really. If you're taking a few players and making an adjustment to their projection based on your research build, it might make sense to still keep some ownership fade on. So it's something that, you know, the builder's still taking into account when it's building your lineups. But if you're making an ownership-based adjustment to every single player projection in the pool, right, maybe you don't need to have any ownership fade at that point. Maybe you've already kind of gotten the ownership value in there. So I think the theory of this is, yes, if you are incorporating ownership into other parts of your process by editing projections and things like that, it does make sense to avoid double counting by bringing that slider down a little. But it's going, in terms of where you should put that, is going to depend a lot on what your process looks like, and also how contrarian you want to be, right? There are some people are going to be more or less willing to aggressively fade chalk or play chalk in different sized contests as well. So, I think that's again going to be a situation where I would make your adjustments and then experiment with that slider and see what it looks like on the default value, and then maybe turn it off and see what your lineups look like with the ownership fade off. And then maybe look at the midpoint between those two and see what those builds look like and find kind of where you want that to be, is what I would recommend there. But good question as well. Cool. Okay. Let's keep going here. So this is another very kind of similarly themed question here. And this one's from Tone. And he said, if I'm using exposures from my research build to help identify, so actually a very similar question, to help identify leverage possibilities, and then using that info to set min and max exposures for players, do you recommend lowering the sliders to offset SaberSim doing some of this naturally already? If so, what would be a general recommendation as how much to lower them? Yeah, so this is again kind of like a tricky... question to answer in a way that's like really specific, because I don't know exactly what your process is looking like and what adjustments you're making. I will say, if you are making adjustments to minimum and maximum exposures before the build, those provide very concrete guardrails on either side of how much a player can or can't be used. So there's not a lot of risk of, you know, if you've set your min and max exposures for a bunch of players of how you want to tackle the slate and your ownership fade slider is really high, well, it's not as if ownership can be too much double counted, because those min and max exposures are rigid lines that can't be crossed by the builder. Whereas if you're adjusting projections, it's a little bit more flexible. It's also a little bit more, you can probably get things a little bit more dialed in exactly the way you want, but it's also a little bit riskier to edit projections because you don't have those guardrails, right? If you made a bunch of adjustments to player projections to exploit ownership and then also had a very high ownership fade slider, you could have 100% exposure to some very low owned play as a result of that. That's not going to happen with the min and max exposures. So I think, you know, not to say one method's better than the other, but I do think the need to kind of double check is maybe a little bit lower when you're adjusting min and max exposures based on your research builds instead, because you've set up those guardrails on either side so that those lineups are always going to look about the way you want them to be. Above and beyond that, again, I would probably recommend experimenting with I would recommend experimenting with changing the slider around based on what your adjustments are looking like and seeing how you like those lineups, right? Are they, do they look kind of contrarian, too contrarian to you? Do they look too chalky to you? If you're going through the steps of running the research build and figuring out where leverage opportunities are already, I think you will probably have some kind of intuitive idea of what you think a good lineup looks like for that slate and how you want to tackle that slate. So I would run it at different settings and see what you like, right? Or how you want to tackle that particular situation. As we kind of go deeper and deeper into some of these research build conversations, it gets, and this is actually kind of true of really all of these DFS strategy things that we talk about here, as we get deeper and deeper and deeper into like very kind of nuanced questions that are specific to individual processes, it gets a little bit harder for me to give you best practices of what to do in different situations. I would experiment with the sliders. With that said, I guess, specifically, I think the slider that I'm most likely to change as a result of what my process looks like at other steps is the ownership fade slider. I don't think there's a very compelling reason to ever really make a lot of adjustments to correlation in particular, and I rarely move sim variance down. I've talked about sometimes I'll bring sim variance up because I like to play a very diversified portfolio in baseball. But when I'm talking about these slider adjustments, I think I'm mostly talking about the ownership fade slider. I almost never change the correlation slider from the default from the lineups I'm actually building. I think it's a pretty well-sized slider that kind of fits for all situations. But yeah, if you are making adjustments to your min and max exposures or your projections before the build process as a result of your research that you're doing elsewhere, whether it's research builds or whatever you're doing, I think it is, at least from a theoretical standpoint, that I think that is a compelling reason to bring down the ownership fade slider a bit so you don't double count. But that is going to depend a lot on your own individual approach. So. Okay, cool. And then a question from DT here about pitcher correlation. So a bit of a different direction here. He said, are stacks in MLB supposed to include pitchers, or is the general consensus that pitchers are excluded from stacks? If they are excluded, what's the theory behind it? I think in general, people don't really talk about pitchers being included in their stacks. So when you're researching slates or listening to content or different things, most of the time people will treat pitchers and their stacks as two totally separate entities. I often kind of think about them separately in my head as well. But there is, you know, just a little bit of positive correlation between hitters and pitchers. And I think it's exaggerated more on pitchers that aren't projected for very well. So actually, you know, on this pretty low here on this particular slate, let's see if we can find one. So Taijuan Walker has some like very light correlations to the other hitters to the hitters on the Mets lineup. Mostly that comes from the win bonus for pitchers. So let me go ahead. Let's see. Kind of hard to scroll. It's kind of weird. Let me see. I'm trying to scroll to the right here so I can see. I don't know. It's kind of hard to get that scroll bar to show up. Maybe something we need to... There it is. It's kind of annoying. So this win bonus, right? So pitchers score points if they're awarded a win in the game. And for a pitcher to win the game, their hitters need to do something. They need to put runs on the board, right? They need to outscore the other team. So there is some light correlations here, and I think you'll see that it's a little bit more exaggerated for pitchers that have a lower average projection, because that win bonus, when they get it, is a greater percentage of that pitcher's points on the slate. So you will see some light correlations there. Because of the way that the correlation slider works, those correlations can get picked up. And you may see that, you know, all other things being equal, if the builder has already put a Mets stack into a lineup and then is building the rest of the lineup out and putting the pitchers in, it might be slightly more likely that it uses Taijuan Walker in that stack as well. But it's not a primary factor. And I think conventionally, when people think about their DFS lineups, the pitchers and stacks are generally thought of as kind of being two separate entities. I think one other point to make on that is that on FanDuel, because there's also the quality start bonus, which is kind of a strange thing. I can't remember exactly how a quality start. Actually, I don't think a quality start creates a correlation to hitters, now that I think about it. So the quality start on FanDuel, if I remember correctly, is something like the pitcher has to throw 6 complete innings and have less than 3 earned runs or something like that. And I was going to say that might also create an additional correlation to hitters, but now that I think about it, it doesn't really, because the pitcher doesn't need his hitters to score runs to get that bonus. So mostly from the win bonus there. So anyway, short answer, they're essentially pretty uncorrelated. There are very small correlations, mostly associated with that win bonus, that the builder will pick up a little bit of, but not overwhelmingly so. So, but good question. All right, cool. Let's jump over to YouTube chat, see what we've got going on in here. AK said, when doing MMA lineups these last 2 weeks, I've been using the given sliders. Still, I've ended up with what I think is too much of the same fighters and paid for it. For example, Yan or Sterling. If I'm looking for more variance beyond the max sim variance in a one-on-one sport like MMA, is lowering max exposure to 50 or changing uniques by 1 or 2 worth it? Just some thoughts, haven't tried it yet. Yeah, I think those are two great approaches. I think, you know, for me in particular, the way like my process ends up working out most of the time here is I won't actually set the build rules there. Let me refresh this. I won't set the build rules as much there, but I will, let's build some lineups. Like, rather than setting a max exposure up front or setting min uniques up front, I will just adjust my exposures here until I'm comfortable with the level of risk associated with that fighter, right? And actually, we were talking about this a little bit. I have these builds from yesterday, so let's just use these. We were talking about this a little bit yesterday, and I actually think this could be a clever way to use a research build for MMA, right? So we built these yesterday. So, right, so this is a 20 max of last week's card, right? So you can see, you know, 100% exposed to Romanov and Mazny here, 80% to Vera, 65 to Breeden, right? In 20 lineups, we're pretty well exposed to some of these fighters. One of the creative ways I think you can use a research build, which is what this was, right? This is 1,500 lineups built on 0-0-10, right? For MMA in particular, these exposures that you get out of a research build will really, I think, do a good job of approximating a fighter's percent chance to show up in the optimal lineup, right? So I think it's a really good number to have in the back of your mind. If you have 100% exposure to Romanov and to Mazny in your 20 lineups, right, knowing that their optimal rates are about 42% and 44% each is a good number to have in the back of your mind, right? To decide how much risk you want to assume with these fighters. For some people, 100% exposure is going to be no problem. But if you're more risk averse, maybe you don't want to roster any fighter more than their percent chance of being optimal. And maybe you do set a global max cap of 45 or 50% exposure to any fighter. Or maybe instead of being 100% exposed, you take their optimal rate and double it, right? So you're comfortable being, you know, maybe about 80% exposed to both of these fighters, right? And then now that pushes you on to some of these other fighters, right? Which maybe you want to bring these guys down a little bit as well, right? This is a risk tolerance thing. This is not something that I would say is going to, you know, adjusting these max exposures is unlikely to have a material impact on your EV, but it is a risk tolerance thing that is important. And it's important along with how much bankroll you're investing and what kind of contests you're attacking here as well. So I talk about research builds a lot from the lens of finding leverage and exploiting ownership, but I think they can also be a very good way to give yourself kind of a solid foundation of understanding the optimal rates. What are the actual percent chances that these fighters pay off for a sport like MMA, and then managing your risk accordingly. So especially, you know, if you're playing 150 lineups, so we're just doing 20 here, right? But if you're playing 150, there's a big difference between having, you know, 100% exposure in 150 than 20. And you may want to, you know, adjust accordingly. So, but, oh yeah, Brad said, where's that corner view? I forgot. I don't have the habit of it. There it is. I got to remember to do that. I do think it's better. I was watching the replay of the one from yesterday. And I think it's better. You can see more of the screen. So, but good question. And let me know if that makes sense. So again, like, I guess I should answer your question specifically here. If you want to set a global max exposure or adjust your minimum uniques, I think that's a perfectly fine. I think this is a perfectly fine situation to do that as well. I typically end up liking to handle these things on a more granular level, on a slate to slate basis or on a fighter to fighter basis. But these rules will be a very good blanket way of increasing your diversity in the build ahead of time. So. That can be a really good approach too. And a lot of times people will ask me about min uniques and they'll say, should I increase min uniques? And typically I always answer that by saying, you know, I think the best reason to adjust your minimum uniques, to raise your minimum uniques, is if you want more diversified lineups than you're getting and your sim variance is already at 10, which is this situation exactly. So if you're building MMA lineups and they're not diversified enough to your liking with sim variance at 10, I think can be a good reason to increase it. I would probably, though, since you're only playing six fighters to a lineup, I would probably never go beyond two. I think two would be the maximum min uniques I would ever want in MMA. If you raise this beyond that, one, it's probably going to take a lot longer to build lineups, and two, those lineups are going to be a lot worse. You are eliminating a lot of positive EV profitable lineups from the pool purely because they are too similar to other positive EV lineups if you brought this up to like three. So anyway. Brad said, Jordan, I want to try a single entry on MLB. Is there anything you would do differently or just put in the correct contest selection and roll with it? Wasn't sure if with single entry you changed an approach or thought anything, since you only get one stab at it, since outcomes can vary so much. Yeah. Baseball is tough playing single entries. I think it's fun every once in a while to mix one in. I don't have it in me to just play a single lineup every night just because, like, again, the variance is so high. It's hard to get everything right. That said, the single entry contests themselves can be a lot softer. They have a high number of effective entrants, a lot of dead money in those contests as well. So I think they're a little bit more beatable. Your expected value's a lot, probably pretty high in those contests, even if it takes a long time to realize that edge. What my favorite way to kind of arrive at my single entry lineup, if I'm just playing a single bullet, is after I have done my research, right? So I'll still typically do a research build to get an idea of what does the slate look like? What do I think the chalkiest stack? What do I think are going to be the chalkiest stacks? What do I think are going to be the best leverage stacks, et cetera, right? Actually, let's start with that here. So if I'm looking for a single entry, right? I will still start with my research build. So let's do a research build. But since I'm just playing a single bullet and it's probably just a single entry contest, I don't feel the need to be as aggressive with my stance. So let's let this build. And I'll kind of talk about how I do a research build for just a single bullet and how it's a little bit different instead. We'll give this just a second here. And then I'll talk about how I kind of end up on the lineup I'm going to play. And this is probably true. This is probably the approach I would use in general if I was playing, you know, three or less lineups, right? So, but I know HC says I enjoy punishing myself with a single entry on a nightly basis. Yeah, I don't have it in me. I think it's fun. I will say I enjoy this process. Every time I demo what would be my single entry process on stream, I'm like, that's fun and I should do more of that. But then when it comes time to enter and lock, I just like the multi-entry stuff too much. So anyway, let's jump back here. Okay. So I still am basically doing the same. I'm basically doing the same process with this research build here, but I don't need to leverage as much, right? So one thing that I will do, right, is like look at the pitchers here. And, you know, so Aaron Nola is showing up as optimal 30% of the time, the most likely to be optimal pitcher on the slate at the moment. And he's going to be 37.2% owned. In a multi-entry contest, right, with that disparity there, I might consider just right out of the gate being under the field on him. In a single entry contest, he is the most likely to be optimal pitcher. It happens 30% of the time here. You don't even need to be optimal that often in a single entry anyway. Like this kind of leverage, I may not need to get like this level of leverage in a single entry. Same thing. Another good example on the other side is somebody like Skubal, right? Only going to be owned 4% of the time, showing up as optimal 11% of the time. This would probably be a guy that I would get exposure to in a multi-entry contest. I don't know if I need him to be I don't know if I need to take this chance in my one single bullet. But I'll typically like to do this to get an idea of kind of, you know, the pitchers that maybe I like or dislike, right? I do think it's interesting that the second most likely to be optimal pitcher in Lizardo is like actually a little bit of positive leverage in this research build. So I'll get an idea of maybe like a few of the pitchers that I'd be interested in using here. And then I'll kind of go and do the same thing with the hitters, right? So I'll look. So the most likely to be optimal stacks here, you can kind of piece this together. You could do a research build with stacks too, but even just looking at this, right? Houston, Tampa Bay, Twins, actually maybe a little bit less Twins, but like definitely actually a little bit less Tampa Bay, but like definitely Houston, right? Philly kind of shows up here, and I'll also do kind of some leverage. I'll look at leverage opportunities here too. So some leverage on Tampa Bay, the Mets, right, have been popping all day here. If you have ownership fade sliders on at all, that's the reason why. And get an idea of kind of what I want to do with the slate. But I'm not looking, again, to find those like highest leverage opportunities. I'm looking for just players that have a relatively high chance of success that also maybe the field is not really appreciating in the right way. And then I'll go ahead and build my lineups, and I'll use the default sliders for the contest I'm playing. So maybe it's something like this. And I'll typically build 10 or so. And then we'll let this build here. And then when I'm actually kind of figuring out what lineup I want to play, I will let one lineup show up, right? I'll look at what that top lineup is, and I will look for reasons to eliminate it. And I'll eliminate lineups from the top until I find one that I like. So I'll show you what I mean here a little bit. So let's actually just jump this back down to one, right? Okay. And so let's actually just like make two adjustments so we can actually see the lineup, right? Okay, so first lineup that comes up, right? So two pitchers that I kind of liked in the research build, right? Good chance to be optimal, but a pretty chalky build otherwise. I think the two chalkiest stacks and maybe the two most negative leverage stacks are Houston and the Twins, right? And we can see like these are some very high ownerships here. So maybe right off the bat, I want to eliminate twin stacks. So I'll eliminate that lineup, right? That, and then that will basically just immediately show me the next lineup. Right. So now let's look at this. So now, okay. So a lineup that kind of does almost the exact opposite, right? We have a no Nola. We leverage directly against the Nola chalk. This is basically like fading and directly leveraging against the two chalkiest pitchers, right? This build might be a little bit too aggressive for me, for a single entry. So maybe in this case, maybe I don't want to play a Padres stack because I don't mind the idea of a Mets stack in a single entry, but maybe I don't want to play the Padres stack, right? Okay, so now we've got another one here. So we bring Nola and Lizardo back. And now what are we doing here? We're playing Miami stack. and a giant stack. It's a 5-3, pretty low owned stacks with two pitchers that have a high chance of success. Maybe I'm happy with this lineup. Maybe this looks good. I feel like this looks pretty good. So maybe I'm good to go. Right. But let's just, for the sake of it, say that I want to kind of continue going down this path, and let's see if I can find any reason to not like this lineup. Maybe on this one, I don't know. Maybe I just don't want to play it because it's, maybe I want to play something that has a little bit higher total salary. So I'll uncheck this lineup, fill up again. And now let's look at the next one, right? We'll just kind of keep going here. So Chris Archer is maybe somebody that wasn't popping in the research build. I don't want to play Archer. And I'll just kind of do this until I end up at the lineup I want, right? So now we've got an interesting one. Okay, so now this is kind of a fun one, right? Also, maybe a little bit of a low salary build, but I think this is an interesting one, right? We play the other two best projected pitchers, fade Nola, leverage directly against the Nola chalk, and then play another kind of low-owned stack alongside it. So maybe there's another lineup that you want to play. And I will basically just do this until I find the lineup that I like and that I want to roll with. And I'll look for reasons to eliminate lineups. Is my approach to just find that single entry. Let's keep going here. Let me see if I find one that I actually really want to. I'm gonna X Baltimore off here a little bit. On this one, I'm gonna X the 4-2-2 stack. I want to play a little bit more of a correlated lineup for a single entry build. I'm gonna X a 3-2-2 stack again. Want to play a little something more correlated. Maybe something like this isn't so bad, right? I think actually my favorite lineup was like that third or fourth one that popped up, but this is another one I kind of like here as well, right? Fading the Twins, which I think is going to be the chalkiest stack, playing two other, you know, chalky stacks with teams that have a good chance of success and two well-projected pitchers, maybe in a 5-3 stack, maybe I do something like this. So that's my single entry approach when I play a single bullet, is I still do my research build. I still get an idea of what the slate looks like. I get an idea of where the chalk's going to be. What do I want to fade? What are the players that has, especially what are the pitchers that have a high overall chance of success? And then eliminating lineups until I find one I like. So Brad said, on a single entry, are you sticking to 5-3 solely? No, not necessarily. I would probably, though. I probably would want I probably would still want a 4 or 5 stack in there. I probably wouldn't want to play a 3 stack in my single entry, right? It would probably be looking for like 4-3s, 4-4s, 5-2s, and 5-3s, depending on the slate, assuming like a decent size slate size. The larger the slate, the more I'd want to correlate. In a single entry, because everybody's just throwing a single bullet in there, and there's generally also a lot less lineups total, you don't really have to get as much right. You don't need a maximally scoring lineup. A lot of times, if you get the two stacks right, you're going to have an elite outcome, even if you don't have the perfect players all in that stack and all of the right one-offs and everything like that as well. So this is a very general, I would say in general, the builder's probably not going to mislead you, right? Like we had to get to like lineup 16, 17, 18 to even start seeing some lineups that weren't 5 or 4 stacks. I would say the correlation slider by default will probably put you in the right direction with what stacks you want anyway. But as a general, very general rule of thumb, I'm probably hoping for a 4-3, 4-4, 5-2, or 5-3 on DraftKings for a single bullet. That's probably just what I'm doing. And that's just a rule of thumb that is a rule that you could definitely break if you're in love with a lineup. But that is what I would do. So actually, let's go back here one more time. I'm going to cross off the twin stacks again. I'm going to see what my favorite lineup was. I think, let's see. Oh, it was this one, actually. It's the one that I eliminated and threw into the trash. I think this was actually my favorite lineup that popped up. I like this lineup. But anyway, so. But that is how I go about it. So HC said, oh man, I feel like Jordan might be crossing over to single entry 3 times a week. Yeah, I mean, I play the single entry contests every night. Just because they're good contests to play. They're soft. But I don't often take this approach of like picking a particular lineup to go into those contests. A lot of times those contests just get one of my lineups that I'm playing elsewhere anyway. I would also say that I do still think, you know, I think it's probably still best practice if you're playing, you know, let's say you have $30 that you're playing on a particular slate, I would probably still recommend, you know, rather than going and finding the highest dollar single entry you can play, I still think it's best practice to spread that out and get more lineups in play to spread out some of your risk. But nothing wrong with being the single entry grinder if that's your vibe. So, but anyway, cool. Let's see. Let me make sure I didn't miss any other questions here. This went super fast today. I can't believe we're almost at an hour already here. I don't see any other questions. So if anybody has any last minute questions, go ahead and fire away at me now. Before we begin to wrap up for today's show, just again, a couple other reminders. If by chance you stumbled upon this here live or the recording on YouTube and you made it all the way to the end, that's awesome. We have a free 7-day trial on our site, sabersim.com. You can come in, check us out. No strings attached. 7-day trial. I always recommend signing up for those trials on the streams closer to the end of the week, just because there's so much fun stuff going on in the DFS world on the weekends. MMA, Formula One's back this weekend, NASCAR, obviously baseball going on, and we'll have basketball again here tomorrow. No basketball tonight, but all of those sports are fully supported. I will be right back here again tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern, and it looks like I missed a question here, so let me go see. Yeah, there was one other one. So Brad had asked, also, can you make a rule ahead of the builds for exposure? For instance, I don't want more than 60% exposure on any pitcher or hitter or whatever it may be. I don't want more than 2x the field on a pitcher. We talked about a similar question earlier this week. There's not an easier way to do positional global exposures at the moment. So we have kind of two options here. You have the max exposure here. That's going to apply to every single player. And you obviously have individual per player exposures here, right? I would say some combination of those should be able to get you what you want. I think the easiest thing to do is, like, you know, I know there's a lot of people that say, I want 60% max exposure to any pitcher and 30% max exposure to any hitter. There's not a very easy way to just program that at the moment, but what you can do is just go in here and say, you know, figure out what's the larger between those two numbers. And it's 60, right? So I want 60% max exposure to any one player, then build these lineups. And that's still going to get applied to the hitters, right? So you still only have 60% max to any one hitter in your entire pool. From there, you can very easily adjust down the individual hitting exposures to get them where you want, while also having the pitchers maxed. This is something I think we'll just add. It's been a very common request this season. I get it. People have, you know, their max hitter exposure they're comfortable with. They have their max pitching exposure they're comfortable with. Not a very easy way to just program that in at the moment. So that is the easiest way to do this here. So let's... I'll show you what I mean. I'll finish this off here. So we set a max exposure to 60, right? So no player is used in more than 60% of our lineups. But we do have batters that are up to 60%. So now what you can do is just kind of come in here and bring this down to 30%, if that's your number. And you'll get there pretty quick, because the pool has already been now built to be pretty flexible, right? Because you've set that max exposure ahead of time. So... HC said, say if the builder has 5-3, 60%. So it's saying 5-3 is the best build for the contest, because the stacking confuses me. This is generally true. Like, I don't know. I would say if you're finding yourself confused by what size stacks are appropriate for a particular contest size, I would trust what you're getting with the default correlation slider. That is why it is there. The reason the correlation slider exists is so that you don't have to kind of agonize and have to think about what size stacks are appropriate for my contest, right? That's what is very painful about building lineups with the traditional optimizer is you have to decide for that sized slate and for that contest what an appropriate stack size is. That is our goal with the correlation slider, to avoid having to think about it like that. So I would not sweat your stack sizes too much overall, and assume that if you are getting a stack size for your particular contest, that it is appropriate for that size contest, right? With that said, I have some general rules of thumb that I like to use for my lineups. And typically, I would say typically most of the time, I end up playing at least a 4-2 in pretty much everything. That's a very general rule of thumb. So most of my stack sizes are 4-2s, 4-2-2s, 4-3s, 4-4s, and then 5-2s and 5-3s. That's like generally what I mostly play. That's also mostly what the builder will give you. I don't know. I think there's in general, based on the fact that you see like 3-3-2s and 3-2-2s show up occasionally in SaberSim, I think there's a compelling argument that those stacks are actually a little bit more viable than than how often I use them. But like here, single entry build, right? 5-3. There are first 10 lineups, 5-3, 5-2, 4-4, 4-3, right? Those are all going to be great size stacks. If we look at the first 50 lineups, even the first 50, 5-3, 5-2, 4-4, 4-3, right? Like these are the stacks you want, especially for single entry. So, and again, don't have to set any rules or anything like that. Any of these stack sizes I would be fine with for this slate for a single entry. So. Awesome. Cool. We will go ahead and wrap it up there. Thanks again for everybody that tuned in today. Last time, SaberSim.com, free 7-day trial. If you haven't already, hit subscribe on YouTube. You'll get a notification every time I go live, so you won't miss a show or show up late like Brad did yesterday. Just kidding. And I will be right back here again tomorrow, same time, same place. Check out the podcast version of the show as well if you're interested. If you generally watch or listen to the show on the way home from work or out walking the dog or anything like that, podcast version is up now on Spotify. And I am expecting it to show up here on Google and Apple Podcasts, hopefully in the next few days. So good luck tonight, and see you guys all tomorrow. Take care.